This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
97.1 FM Talk. Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good afternoon, St. Louis. Getting ready to go here on a Monday afternoon. We are down one member this afternoon. It's like nobody died over the weekend or anything like that. I kind of felt bad saying it that way. No, Sue's off for a few days. You know what's crazy? And I don't know if she mentioned this on the air on Friday. I don't think this is speaking out of turn. But the reason that she's taking off is that yesterday was her anniversary. Wedding anniversary, which
already
is kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
Now, Sue was, you know, has not been married until a year ago. And it was kind of, she's a very private person, unlike me, where everything is open book. But she was, you know, she didn't talk about leading up to the event that much that she was getting married. But obviously, we talked about it. And they decided to take a little anniversary trip, which was awesome. So, congratulations to Sue. She'll be back, I think, on Thursday afternoon this week. So, you're stuck with Fred and Ethan and I. And we're gonna get Ethan real ramped up here right now and pick on Alabama, who does not belong in the CFP, but they are in the CFP. And I don't really care that Notre Dame's not in there either. But come on, man. Three losses, Alabama. How can you justify that?
Here's how you can justify it.
I just like to press buttons. Half of my fun today is going to be pressing Ethan's buttons.
This is how you can justify it. Alabama went 10-2 in the regular season, had a top 10 strength of schedule, top 10 strength of record, and top 10 FBI ranking. They were the only team in the country to do that. You're telling me that a team that is the one seed in the SEC, the toughest conference by far in college football, they get rewarded by making their conference championship. You're going to punish them for having to play an extra game that they lose. Yes, they lost. They lost to a team they beat earlier in the year. While other teams are sitting at home watching those teams play, you cannot punish teams for making their conference championships
when
they're already in the playoffs.
Sadly, I agree with you, and I get that argument. I really do. And I understand it. So that, yeah, but here's the other thing. Like, and we're having this debate right now, and I don't know what, you know, everyone's going to have their own thoughts about this, but I think it's, you know, poor showing for Notre Dame, because what happened was Notre Dame gets snubbed. They're not in the CFP. Then, you know, what happens typically in college football, the same thing that's happened for decades. You go to a bowl game that means nothing, right? None of them have ever meant anything except for, you know, the national championship games, which have been down to either two teams or four teams in the last however many years. So now we have a 12-team playoff, which is going to, you know, no doubt expand. But everybody else is essentially playing for bowl games, right? So I read something in The Athletic. Let me put another, you know, spin on this. And I can say that I could maybe even be persuaded here to think of this in another direction. So I'm not sure who wrote this for The Athletic, but they said, walking away from the season looks bad on the surface for Notre Dame. It's taking their golden football and going home. Notre Dame usually gets what it wants, including the full $20 million payout last year for making the title game, money usually given to a school's conference. But they're not in a conference, remember, right? So, but this is a protest vote against the system more than anything. Even if Notre Dame hasn't articulated that well, all bowl games outside of the CFP are exhibitions devoid of real stakes. But that's kind of been the case all along, right? So they exist only because enough people watch them on ESPN, this guy says. And now, with Notre Dame sitting on the postseason, fewer will be watching. Maybe. Okay, there's still college football fans out there that aren't Notre Dame fans.
They have a huge market. I mean, there's no arguing that, and their fans won't be watching, so they'll miss out on that.
But I love this guy, and this is where I want to get it. I love Marcus Freeman, the coach of Notre Dame. He's really impressed me when I've seen him in interviews, post-game, pre-game, you know, on sets, and I really think that that guy has a lot going for him. So what they said in this piece, they said Marcus Freeman likes to say choose hard and challenge everything. At first glance, Notre Dame opting out felt like doing neither, but to talk to enough former players, and the opposite may actually be true. Pulling a pin on the postseason opt-out grenade would have been harder than going through with the charade of wanting to play in a game where no one wanted to be. I mean, there might be something to that, right? The idea of Freeman capping the season by eating a slammin' strawberry breakfast treat was a hard pass because that was like the it was the
they've been in the Pop-Tart Bowl.
The Pop-Tart Bowl,
which is
right?
By far the best non-playoff yeah. bowl. Let me just add that.
Which, by the way, that's a great line. I love that. And then he says the fact that football careers of a couple of dozen players ended on Sunday is collateral damage. And that's really kind of the sad part is these kids, they don't get to play again.
Yep.
Also, skipping 15 bowl practices is a negative. Also, yes, Freeman and his staff can flip fully to next season, especially when the transfer portal opens on January 2nd, because if this snub fuels anything, it has to be using this time to build a better version of Notre Dame for 2026. And then this guy says, for the record, the correct order of Notre Dame, Alabama, and Miami should have been Miami 9, Notre Dame 10, Alabama 11. The point of the CFP is not to incentivize playing in conference championship games. And if well, he mentioned someone here. I'm not sure who he's referring to, so I'll just stop there because I was doing some screen captures. But look, I understand, you know, why they're doing it. I do think it seems like a little bit of a big baby move, and you can stand up and say, okay, well, you know, we didn't get there, but we're going to close strong and give our kids an opportunity to play in this bowl game. But they've decided to go otherwise, haven't they?
I've really appreciated, though, the way that a lot of teams that were also in the mix for that final playoff spot, you know, BYU, Vanderbilt, coming out and saying, like, it's our fault that we didn't make the college football playoff at the end of the day. We were not good enough to. And then also saying, we're excited for our bowl game because we love to play football and we are excited for the opportunity to play in these bowl games. So I look at Marcus Freeman in this situation. You know, I have family ties to Notre Dame. My mom was born in South Bend. And this is a team that I've always, like, part of me's always pulled for. But I think this is extremely unprofessional. I mean, you're a football coach. You're not just, what percentage of these kids are going to go on to play in the NFL?
Very
small percentage of them. The rest of them are going to be adults eventually and have to live life. And what is it teaching them if you don't like the outcome of something to go and walk away from it? I think it's extremely unprofessional.
Did they let the kids sort of vote at all or not?
I have no idea. Now, the message that was kind of passed along was that a lot of the kids didn't want to play in this, so they, I guess, kind of backed them. But even then, you're the leader of that room.
Yeah,
it's your decision.
By the way, the other thing is you're going to have, perhaps, maybe not, but you might have a different reaction yesterday at noon or 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon compared to what you might have at this time. In other words, your emotions are going to be pretty raw. You're going to make decisions and say, F them, we're not going to play. But then maybe when you sit back and think about it a little bit, you might feel otherwise. Now, for Notre Dame, it's too late. It doesn't matter. They didn't accept a bid, right? So they're done. But I can see some, you know, lack of buyer's remorse, if you will, with some of the coaches and some of the teammates. Now, what Coach Strings said, I think, is interesting. And he kind of has to say this because he's the coach of a team that obviously eliminated itself from competition from the CFP a few weeks ago with too many losses in the SEC. But he called out Notre Dame.
People say anytime, anywhere. I guess some people mean it, some people don't. So, you know, for us right now, we got an opportunity to go play in a bowl game.
That was the shot against Notre Dame there.
I'm fired up about the opportunity. You know, everybody's different. Everybody's seasons are totally different. You know, our goals got changed, you know, when our quarterback got dinged up and injured. And so for us, this is a heck of an opportunity. I think bowl games are really determined by two things. One, the location. What an awesome location to get to play in Jacksonville, Florida at an NFL stadium. Have a great experience in Jacksonville. And then the second one is the opponent that you get. I mean, what an awesome thing to get to play the ACC regular season champ Get to play Virginia. I know it didn't end the way they want to, but that's a quality team.
All right, so they're playing in the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville, Florida, against Virginia. That's the draw for Mizzou. Here's a little more Coach Drink.
I don't like this playoff or bust mentality. I think it's bad for college football. I think it's bad for the sport. I think the playoffs are awesome. I don't think it's nearly inclusive enough. And then I'll just say this, since we're already on this whole thing. You know, just because viewership is up in college football does not mean that college football is healthy. It does not mean that college sports is healthy. It means that viewership is up, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But for us to maintain the success that college sports are having, we've got to look at it, man. Like, there's no way I think that anybody could think that this calendar is healthy. I don't think there's any way that they can think that this is healthy for the student athlete to constantly be transferring and not getting progress towards degree.
Agreed.
To leave college athletics without a degree is, I think, is really bad for the student athlete. I think it's bad for coaches. And we've got to figure all this out because, again, just because viewership is up doesn't mean the sport is healthy.
You know, I sat down with the late Demetrius Johnson with Coach Drink at dinner. This goes back almost probably 3 years, talking about NIL and some of the stuff. So it was my first chance to meet him, and I talked to him several times since. But, I mean, I remember at that particular meeting, this whole thing was the Wild Wild West, and, you know, they weren't sure how they were going to handle it. And even then, he agreed that there needed to be, you know, some more rules. I think to a certain extent, the NCAA is still figuring this stuff out. It seems pretty obvious to me that within a couple of years, they're going to expand the playoff. But, you know, Ethan, if you expand the playoff, why wouldn't there be even more of a feeling that the bowls make no difference at all? So if you go to 16 or whatever the number might be, 24, then you say, okay, well, a lot of people are playing for these eight games or whatever the, you know, the first round might be. But then you can almost make a stronger case that if you're not playing for that, what else is there, right?
Here's the thing. I would rather, and I heard a well-known college football analyst say this the other day, Josh Pate. He said, I would rather have a college football playoff where you are arguing that there is too many good teams and not enough spots than too many spots and or not enough teams for what they have. And the reality is that unless you get to 35, 36 teams, there's always going to be teams that think that they should be in. So the problem is not going to change there. The biggest issue with this is the ACC being as bad as they were, because as a result,
Duke has five losses and they want to get in, right?
And they got in on some crazy tiebreaker over Miami. If Miami gets in the place of Duke, well, then Notre Dame's still in because Miami has a conference championship slot. But because Miami has that at-large spot, you have two group of five teams playing in this college football playoff that were barely ranked until the end of the year. Have you seen the spreads on those playoff games?
Well, they're going to be blowouts.
For the Oregon James Madison game, it's like 21 and a half.
Yeah, it's going
to
be 30 points.
And for the Tulane Ole Miss one, it's like 17 and a half.
The first round games are not going to be close.
That's the biggest issue with this, and I think that they're going to be tweaking some stuff in the offseason.
So we're kind of bearing the lead, because how much fun. This is one of my favorite things in everything. This is not just sports. Some of you would know this at this time. One of my favorite things is how often the experts get it wrong. And I'm watching the pregame for this Indiana Ohio State game, and there is not a damn person that not only thinks that Indiana might win, but they're not giving them any possibility of a victory over Ohio State, which I thought was just ridiculous. And that made me root for Indiana even more. And then you got this Mendoza kid who could have gone to Mizzou, by the way, who's just incredible. And he comes off at like the 16-year-old kid just getting his driver's license or something.
It sounds so beautiful. I want to give all the glory to God. You're never supposed to be in a position, but by glory.
It's a little hard to hear the audio, but he was excited. He was praising God and
staring straight
like
in the camera.
Kid.
Oh,
yeah.
It was so great.
It was awesome. So we have a couple of Indiana connections and very strong ones here on this show. One is our friend Alex Rich, who I didn't know this, Fred. He ended up going to the game.
Yeah.
And so did Tom Ackerman, who's the sports director at KMOX. So they both have some stories that we're going to share this afternoon. We've got Josh Hammer coming up in a couple of minutes. He wrote a great column about some of this climate alarmism that's falling apart. It's always one of my favorite topics. There's some Supreme Court cases. In fact, one today over presidential power that was interesting, that was argued before the court. Our constitutional law expert Ilya Shapiro will join us. We have a Monday edition of Sue's News featuring Ethan, Selena Zito in the next hour. A lot still to come, plus an audio cut of the day on a Monday edition of The Mark Reardon Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
All right, so Mark Reardon show on a Monday afternoon. A couple of cases that went before the Supreme Court today. Ilya Shapiro is going to join us after the bottom of the hour. And then I mentioned, you know, we had our friend Alex Rich on last Wednesday. And I think he called an audible. Alex played Division I baseball at Indiana. He actually backed up Kyle Schwarber, which means he didn't play very much. But he's a big IU guy, and he was at the win over Ohio State, so he's got some stories to share right before Sue's news. Sue's off today, though. She'll be back on Thursday, taking a few days off for her anniversary. She's been married a year already, which is kind of crazy. We also have some, a lot of sports news this afternoon, including the baseball winter meetings underway. I think we're going to try to visit with Matt Pauly, who's down there this week, as we get moving toward the end of the week. But Frank Cusimano joins us, as he always does on a Monday, and that's coming up at about 4:45 or so. Josh Hammer back with us, Newsweek senior editor-at-large, the host of The Josh Hammer Show. You hear that Saturdays at 1 p.m. on 97.1 FM Talk. Josh, how are you this afternoon?
Mark, I'm doing just great. I hope that you had a great Thanksgiving holiday week and a half ago as well, my friend.
It was outstanding. I had my grandson who was in town, so yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
It was a lot of fun, and here we are. I can't believe we're sitting like almost 2 weeks before Christmas, which is kind of nuts the way that the time is going by. But one of my favorite topics, you know, I don't know if you and I have ever really talked about this. I've always been over the climate change BS narrative, because I would describe myself, and I don't know how you would label or if you like labels, but I'm not a climate change denier. I understand the climate's changed. There's been periods of warming, but I'm a lukewarmer. So I don't know how much we're actually causing the warming. But here's what I know for sure. I know we can't do anything about it, really, right? So the climate alarmism and the apocalyptic version of what this country might be like right now in 2025, if you go back to the New York Times in 1995, all the beaches were supposed to be gone. All this stuff was supposed to happen. Then you can go to 2004 and read The Guardian with the same predictions of 25 or 30 years. That hasn't happened. Then you can listen to Greta Thunberg from the last 10 years. We're supposed to be underwater. So none of this has really come to fruition. At what point do people stop buying into this nonsense?
Well, Mark, it's not entirely clear that there was a singular moment that I can point to as being the inflection point, but what I did write about in my column this past week was that it occurred to me that at some undefined point, let's call it maybe over the past year, maybe since the election of Donald Trump, it seems to me that if we're trying to take various data points and forge them together to create a political narrative, it seems to me that the left has made something of a conscientious effort to distance itself from the climate change alarmism, catastrophism, whatever you want to call it, that had really characterized them for years and years and years. And the first thing that really caught my eye and started and really kind of galvanized me to do a little further digging was this somewhat remarkable blog post that, Bill Gates put up on his website, gatesnotes.com. There was really no one talking about it. It broadly escaped attention, at least in my media circles. And he posted this on October 28th. And it was in advance of the COP30 climate change boondoggle summit. And he basically said that the so-called doomsday view of climate change is just wrong. He said that this is wrong, that is wrong to say that the world is going to start burning up, the polar ice caps are going to melt. And let's be clear, this is Bill freaking Gates. I mean this is the guy
who's been saying all these things for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's arguably been no one more than like Al Gore, who was more front and center and publicly identified with this particular change. I mean, in the same blog post, Gates even said that, quote, using more energy is a good thing. More energy, because it's so closely correlated with economic growth. And, like, I read that. I was like, what is going on there? And then I saw in the Wall Street Journal just about a week ago or so, there was this study that came out in a journal called Nature, which is a pretty well-known journal in scientific circles. And they had this study that came out in April 2024. And the study predicted that by the turn of the next century, by the year 2100, unless CO2 emissions and various other emissions are dramatically reduced, they predicted there will be a 62% decline in global economic output. And to little fanfare, they actually formally retracted that study just like a week ago, a year and a half later, because they found that the underlying data was flawed.
Well, wait, let me stop you right there, because this is important. They didn't correct the paper, right? This is an important distinction. They didn't make corrections. They retracted it because they had to.
Correct. It's the most, I don't want to say most shameful, but it really is in some way like the most shameful thing that you can do after publishing an academic study.
Especially, after it's been cited 168 times, you know, in other publications.
Right. I mean, exactly right. Nature is a very well-known journal. And their bottom line conclusion was so flawed that they said, you know what, this is bunk and we have to pull the whole thing a year and a half later. So you look at these data points, and there's some other polling data as well. Long story short, fewer people today are confident that man is the lead contributor to climate change. Fewer people are confident today than they were as recently as 7-8 years ago or so. And it seems like the left is having something of a sobering moment on this issue. And this is a winning issue for Republicans. It's a winning issue for the right for fairly obvious reasons, I would say. And look, I mean, the cynic, someone who's a GOP partisan might say, okay, this is going to deprive Republicans of a winning issue. But I think anyone who has the common good, I mean, the general welfare of the American people as their lead concern would say that this is an unambiguously good thing because, frankly, these policies for way too long have harmed way too many people.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is interesting. There is a bunch of things, and they don't get a lot of coverage, to your point, that have kind of happened over the course of the last 6 months, even year, which have really forced this climate house of cards to come falling down. And you know, I have to think to myself, because I've been talking about this on the radio for 3 decades, what if we would have put a lot of that energy about all the climate alarmism and the sky is falling into talking about ways to adapt to the situations that the climate will continue to present, because that's where the focus needs to be. The conversation needs to be about adaptation. Now, Josh, I've always said, look, if we lose California in the whole deal, is that really a big loss anyway? We'll have beachfront property in Las Vegas, so I think there's some wins there. But it would be nice, as someone who has followed this and rolled my eyes at all the nonsense over the years and talked to people, like even down, you know, not too far from where I am right now at the University of Missouri, the lead climatologist, Dr. Anthony Lupo, who's been on my show many times, and he's not a climate change alarmist guy. He keeps this into perspective. Dr. Roy Spencer down in Alabama. So there are voices that are saying in this climate debate, they've been there for all these decades. They just don't get amplified the way the rest of these people do. And now maybe we're going to get a little bit back to sanity here on this issue. Sanity, I hope so.
Yeah, it seems that is happening, and it's hard to say. Look, I mean, to be clear, there is an extent of I will believe the full, you know, the full breadth of this when I actually see it. You know, when I see more elected Democratic officials actually talk the talk. It's one thing for Bill Gates, who's not official, to have something of an intellectual change of heart. I think it's something else for someone like a Jasmine Crockett or an AOC or whatever. So there's an element of I will believe it when the elected officials actually do it. But look, I mean, I guess the most straightforward way to try to analyze this from a political perspective is that if this does actually happen, if the intellectual headwinds actually do translate into real political and public policy changes, is that this is clearly an issue where the left has identified that they are just woefully out of touch. Now, are they going to do the same thing when it comes to other issues where they're woefully out of touch? When it comes to immigration is maybe the single most obvious example, when it comes to the transgender debate and biological males and women's sports and all that. I don't know. I've seen glimmers of it there, and we're going to start to see a lot of this play out sooner rather than later in the 2028 presidential primary, frankly. So we'll start to see just how much this translates. But for now, again, I think it's green shoots. It's encouraging, optimistic signs for the American people.
Josh Hammer with us, Stephanie. What did you make of all of the... And you know, I'm concerned that a lot of the people in this country really don't know the depths of this controversy in Minnesota with the Somalis and what we're looking at now, which could be a couple of billion with a B, dollars of fraud with the Medicare waste and the fake, you know, groups that were supposed to be feeding kids and all that stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable. But again, even politically, I think that Tim Walz has gotten off a little easy on this one.
Oh, yeah. He's gone off extremely easily so far. And by the way, another aspect to this genuine controversy, which is seems to me, based on what I've read thus far, seems to be one of the largest fraud scandals, just elements of public fraud, defrauding of the taxpayer. One of the largest public taxpayer defrauding scandals in American history, frankly, based on what I've gleaned thus far.
I think so.
And one of the elements of this is a little bit of, what did Kamala Harris know? When did she know it? I mean, right. Tim Walz looks bad enough, but let's not forget that Tim Walz was selected as the running mate, and this was well underway. I mean, most of the stuff goes back to COVID. I mean, most of these programs go back to COVID. So if Tim Walz and Keith Ellison and Ilhan Omar and all the various other Democratic elected officials in the state of Minnesota, if they were as complicit in trying to cover this up and try to hush-hush, shoo-shoo away any kind of asking questions to apply any kind of public light or scrutiny and just trying to do so in the name of so-called racism, if they were as complicit as it seems, then one of two things, Mark, has to be true when it comes to Kamala Harris. Either one, she knew about it and decided that it was not a big deal. That's pretty insane. Or two, she just had no idea about it, which just proves how grossly incompetent she is. And we kind of knew that all along.
Did they vet at all? Yeah. I mean, was there any vetting? Or you just, to your point, do they just assume, you know what? We got the media on our side. That's not going to become a story. Josh Hammer with us this afternoon. You can hear him every Saturday at 1 p.m. here on 97.1 FM Talk. You have a great week. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
Ilya Shapiro on deck. We got some cases that went before the Supreme Court in the last few days, including one today about presidential powers that's very interesting.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
I don't understand why it is that the thought that the president gets to control everything can outweigh Congress's clear authority and duty to protect the people in this way.
How did she ever get confirmed or even was in the mix for a nomination for the Supreme Court? That is KBJ Contenti Brown Jackson. There was an interesting case about presidential powers that went before the court today. Ilya Shapiro is back with us, Senior Fellow and Director of Constitutional Studies at the Manhattan Institute. Ilya, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just finished writing an op-ed about this case that we're going to talk about. That'll be in the New York Post tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. All right. Explain what's at play here with these arguments. And is this another one of those situations where the court has kind of tipped its hand and we sort of know what's going to happen in the decision?
They tipped their hand back in the spring when they paused a lower court ruling involving a different appointee who was fired and was challenging that removal. So the issue here is, does the president get to remove heads of so-called independent agencies? And the theory isn't that complicated. We have three branches of government looking to, you know, ninth grade the little jingle on TV that dating myself there, Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so,
I love those.
So every part of government has to be either part of the executive branch, which the president heads up, the legislative branch, which is Congress, or the judicial branch, which is the Supreme Court. And yet we have all of these alphabet agencies. The one that was discussed in the argument today is the Federal Trade Commission. But whether you're talking about the National Labor Relations Board, the Federal Communications Commission, we can go on all day. It's all we talk about inside the Beltway here around D.C. And if the president doesn't control those appointments, can't remove them, because he wants to go with someone who's more aligned with his policies, say, then what part of government is this agency in? Because we only have three. Congress can't create a fourth. And that's what this ultimately comes down to. There's a 90-year-old precedent where the Supreme Court allowed restrictions on presidential control over these agency heads because it said then the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, had a quasi-legislative and a quasi-judicial function in addition to the executive one. Well, whatever was going on in 1935, now the way that these agencies operate are clearly part of the executive branch and the president should be able to control them, goes the argument, and I think a clear majority of the court is going to go that way.
So here's Brett Kavanaugh.
I want to give you a chance to deal with the hard hypothetical. When both houses of Congress and president are controlled by the same party, them creating a lot of these independent agencies with or extending some of the current independent agencies into these kinds of situations so as to thwart future presidents of the opposite party.
So I don't even know what the hell he said there. Maybe you'll have to help me with that, Ilya, but he was kind of offering a hypothetical, wasn't he?
Yeah, and, you know, Kavanaugh is definitely one to look at, and Chief Justice Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett, and they were deeply skeptical of the challenger's argument that there needs to be some insulation from presidential control.
So how does this apply to this Federal Reserve case? Because I'm reading that some of this has relation to a case that might be heard in January as well. Can you explain that?
Right. So it looks like, and again, that little emergency action that the court took back in the spring that I mentioned earlier, it was only two paragraphs, wasn't a full opinion, but they did say at the time that the Federal Reserve may well be different. And during argument that came up this morning, as well as so-called Article I courts, that is the courts in the armed forces, tax courts, patents and intellectual property courts, these specialized bodies that are part of that Congress created. They're not part of the judiciary. But the Article I courts do exercise a judicial power, so we can see how that might be different. And the Federal Reserve, I don't know how they're exactly going to phrase it, but that's everybody's big concern. So it doesn't look like the Federal Reserve will be affected by this decision. And that's why the case that's being argued next month, the Cook case, the removal of Lisa Cook, President Trump isn't even saying that he has the power to remove Federal Reserve members for any reason. He's alleging fraud, that she engaged in shenanigans in some home mortgage applications,
right,
and therefore is unfit to be on the body that regulates banks.
On the 90-year case from 90-year, is that what's referred to as Humphrey's executor?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. So because I've heard that term and it's been just a little confusing to me, but
it's a weird scenario. So this guy Humphreys was appointed to the FTC and then that was rescinded, and he died while the litigation was pending, and so they wanted back pay. They couldn't obviously reinstate him since he died, so they wanted back pay, say, with a ruling that he was improperly removed, and ultimately that's what the court did.
All right, so is there a case that's coming before the court that deals with the birthright citizenship issue?
That'll be next term, probably.
Oh, not till next term. Okay.
They just granted it
Got
last
it.
Week, which means, depending on how briefing goes, this probably won't be, they probably don't want to expedite the briefing, but it could be. I mean, they could set it for, have a special session in April or something, like they've done with a couple of cases in recent years. So it could be still this term, but more likely it'll be next term. And again, the issue is whether, the president had an executive order getting rid of citizenship upon birth in the United States for kids of illegal aliens and those who are here temporarily on tourist visas and the like. And there's the constitutional question, and then there's also the practical one. Even if the Constitution doesn't require it, our laws are set up that way, and that's been our practice for over 100 years. So maybe Congress could do it, but not the president acting alone.
Yeah,
that's
interesting.
That's the outline of the argument.
That's a complicated one. There's no doubt about that. Ilya Shapiro back with us this afternoon. Then the Supreme Court also cleared the way for Texas to use their new map. Is that something that is significant, and will it play in other states, or is every state situation different?
Every state is factually different. I mean, the opinions here coming out of the three-judge district court in Texas are very fact-bound, both the majority and the dissent. But what the court is effectively doing is, for practical purposes, they didn't want to have a scenario where California was allowed to redistrict for the Democrats' benefit. Texas was not allowed to redistrict for the Republicans' benefit. And I think this whole line of review of districting is going to change once the court rules on a case that it heard argument on back in October regarding of the proper use of race in districting. I think they're going to throw up their hands and say, okay, yeah, if there's a smoking gun saying that you're racially discriminatory, that's one thing. But just drawing districts and then saying, you know, you haven't used race enough to carve out a majority-minority district or something like that, we're not going to entertain that. And once they make a decision like that, as the conventional wisdom suggests they will, then these sorts of challenges to the redistricting of the kind that the lower court blocked in Texas, they will go away.
Let me take you off the court just briefly and onto Israel and anti-Semitism. You know, I just had Josh Hammer on, and you guys know each other pretty well. It's stunning to me. Whenever Josh is on, he retweets, you know, the segments. And I cannot believe some of the responses, the anti-Semitic responses that are on just, you know, his posts about the audio from my show. I'm just stunned by it when I read what people say. There was a piece that was in the Wall Street Journal the other day that said pro-Hamas students aren't the source of campus anti-Semitism. Administrators have to look at the root cause, faculty who have politicized their academic programs and departments. And that's got to be true, and we document this all the time, but that's kind of an interesting take considering the pro-Hamas demonstrations and all that is what really gets the attention. But it's some of these professors and people behind the scenes that are pushing a lot of this stuff.
Well, it's both things can be true. And in fact, three things can be true: the professors, the students, and the administrators who craft the DEI trainings. DEI administrators are some of the most anti-Semitic people in the country in general, based on these surveys, even more than the average faculty member. So, yeah, there are problems everywhere, including the admissions office. How did all of these students get
sure.
in? Well, there must be a problem there, too.
Excellent. All right, Ilya, thank you so much for joining me on this Monday. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Take care. That's Ilya Shapiro with us this afternoon. Let me read a little bit from that Wall Street Journal piece. I didn't do this on Friday. We had the roundtable, but they kind of bring the receipts and the goods here just a little bit. Over the past few years, departments on more than 100 campuses have issued statements swearing to the Palestinian cause, many of them explicitly endorsing anti-Zionist activism and anti-Israel boycotts. Even among the schools most popular with Jewish students, more than half hosted events sponsored by academic departments that featured pro-boycott speakers last year alone. The worst offenders, This will come as no surprise. Harvard, 44 events. Georgetown, 43 events. Columbia University, 36. UC Berkeley, 25. New York University, 22. And the University of Chicago, 22. So the point of this piece in the journal was, if you work in a university, you are likely to see a constant stream of anti-Israel vitriol from academics. The person who wrote this is from the University of California, some professors from there, Santa Cruz, UCSC. And they said that of the 28 events that some 20 departments have sponsored since October 7th, they featured speakers bitterly hostile to Israel. They talked about something that happened at that school earlier this year that the Department of Education, not the Department of Education, but the Education Department at Santa Cruz put on, which urged prospective early childhood teachers to bring, quote, an anti-Zionist commitment to kindergarten classrooms. The Campus Institute of the Arts and Sciences, despite its genteel title, hosted a 7-week anti-Israel exhibit produced by Al-Haq, which the Israeli government says has links to the liberation of Palestine and the group that is also another terrorist group. It's Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine is the full name, PFLP. So they get into the real details here of how, and we focus on this, and Ilya's right on DEI. This is what they push in some of this stuff. So the people who wrote this in the journal, we might want to be able to get some of these people on the air, because I thought that was interesting when they ran down the numbers. 3:44. Don't forget, Sue's off today. We got a Monday edition of Sue's News with Ethan coming up. So we had another interesting moment with President Trump and a member of the media who calls the fake news media ABC today. And I myself will admit that I'm a little confused on this one, because I'm going to have to go back and cross-reference something. So on Wednesday, now this is a CNN report, but we talked about it toward the end of the week. On Wednesday, he said that his administration would certainly, that's the word that they have in quote here, release a video of a follow-up strike on the drug vessel in the Caribbean after the initial attack did not kill everyone on board. This has to do with this controversy involving the, whatever you want to call it, the double tap or the second strike. So one of the narratives heading into the weekend is, all right, well, why not? Because a bunch of members of select committees in Washington on Capitol Hill were able to see the video. You might remember what happened on Thursday. We talked about this on the roundtable. It was like they watched two different videos. The Democrats came out of that meeting saying it's worse, one of the worst things they've ever seen. Tom Cotton and others came out saying it was completely justified. So I was under the impression, again, now I'd have to go back and check the audio and see if this was reported accurately, but it appeared as if the president was willing to release the entire tape. So he's asked about that by an ABC reporter today, and it doesn't go very well.
Mr. President, you said you would have no problem with releasing the full video of that strike on September 2nd off the coast of Venezuela. Secretary Hegseth now says...
You said that. I didn't say that. This is ABC fake news.
You said that you would have no problem releasing the full bit. Okay, well, Secretary Hegseth... No,
whatever Hegseth wants to do is okay with
me. He now says it's under review. Are you ordering the secretary to release that full video?
Well, whatever he decides is okay with me. So every boat we knock out of the water, every boat, we save 25,000 American lives. That was a boat loaded up with drugs. I saw the video. They were trying to turn the boat back to where it could float. And we didn't want to see that, because that boat was loaded up with drugs just like everything else.
You said that it was
You're
up to Secretary Hegseth.
You're the most obnoxious reporter in the whole place. Let me just tell you, you are an obnoxious, a terrible reporter. And it's always the same thing with you. I told you, whatever Pete Hegseth wants to do is okay with me.
I don't know who that... Mary Bruce has been one that's been kind of highlighted at ABC, but I don't think that was her voice, so I'm not sure exactly who he was pointing to. Then he was not in a good mood with the media today.
Quick question. There's at least 20 House Republicans who have either said they're going to retire or not run again.
Democrats
right.
also.
Do you have any...
Well, why don't you mention them? How many Democrats are going to retire? How many Democrats?
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, but why don't you tell me the number of Democrats, too?
Are you concerned about the narrow margins? And
how many Democrats are retiring? How come you only know the Republicans but not the Democrats?
Because I came prepared to ask you a question about...
No, you're unprepared, because you should know the Democrats. You're totally unprepared.
I think Trump had her on that one, right? Yeah, no, she didn't come prepared at all. She is unprepared. Then there's Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I don't even know what to say about her. But here's what I do know is 60 Minutes did a story a couple years ago on Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I'm not sure it was a completely fair story. They showed her working out. I was pretty impressed with her physique. She works out hard. speaking as someone who has very little muscle content whatsoever. But now, of course, the story is she's fighting with Trump. So they want to give her, I mean, 60 Minutes isn't going to go to Scott Bessent or someone like Eric Schmidt or someone who's on the side of the president on these issues. They're going to find someone who doesn't like President Trump anymore. And that's what they found in Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, she has decided that she's stepping out of her role as a member of Congress after the first of the year.
I think they're terrified to step out of line and get a nasty Truth Social post on them. Yes.
That was the question that Leslie Stahl asked about whether other Republicans are afraid of Trump.
I have zero plans, zero desire to run for president. I would hate the Senate. I'm not running for governor.
Well, in that case, maybe she's just doing the right thing and just getting out.
He was extremely angry at me that I had signed the discharge petition to release the files. I fully believe that those women deserve everything they're asking. They're asking for all of it to come out.
She's talking, of course, about the Epstein files.
For an America First president, the number one focus should have been domestic policy, and it wasn't. And so, of course, I was critical because those were my campaign promises. Once we fix everything here, then fine, we'll talk to the rest of the world.
Well, I think that the domestic policy was there from the very beginning. I think the Big Beautiful Bill was certainly on the table from the start. What we do know is that the Republicans, and maybe they're going to try to change this a little bit, they screwed up the marketing of that. And they're going to try to make, you know, a little bit more effort or sharpen the messaging going into next year to tell people the benefits of that bill and other pieces of legislation. I think I saw one more cut here by Marjorie Taylor Greene.
It was sudden, but a lot of things changed.
So this is on her decision. Why quit? Because she said, all right, I'm resigning after the first of the year.
It was sudden, but a lot of things changed. I stood for women who were raped when they were 14 years old. And the president that I fought for 5 years called me a traitor for that.
Yeah, and I don't think that President Trump should have called her a traitor, so maybe she's doing the right thing and just getting out of the way at this time. We'll take a break. We'll be back here, and our friend Alex Richard joins us on Wednesday. He's an IU guy. He was at that game when Indiana beat Ohio State. I know that he sent me a text yesterday saying he's got some great stories, so we'll get into that. Selena Zito, who, of course, writes at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Washington Examiner, also on the Free Press, and her new book is called Butler, The Untold Story of the Near Assassination of Donald Trump and the Fight for America's Heartland. She has some thoughts on the president's visit to northeastern Pennsylvania tomorrow. So that's what they're doing. You know, I just mentioned the economy and sharpening the focus. The president hitting the road tomorrow. He's going to stop in northeastern Pennsylvania. I think the administration knows that this is something that needs to be at the top of their agenda. She was also recently in the Oval Office with her grandchildren. And I don't even think we've talked to Selena since some of this information about Thomas Crooks, the would-be assassin in Pennsylvania, came out. So that's coming up at 4:30.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.